Hello and welcome back to Podcast from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. If you're an industrial consumer of natural gas in South Africa, you've had a harrowing 2 years. In August 2023, Sasol, the only South African gas supplier to industry, announced it was going to suspend the supply of gas entirely from June 1st, 2026. This was no small threat. Some really big local manufacturers in chemicals, steel, glass, food and drinks industries depend completely on the gas that Sasol brings into the country from Mozambique and a pipeline called Romco. South African industrial gas users use the gas not for power but for creating heat in their various processes, and they directly employ around 70,000 people and contribute about 300 to 500 billion rand a year in the economy via things like salaries, taxes, and procurement. Jaco Human is the CEO of the Industrial Gas Users Association of Southern Africa, and he's with me for this edition. Jaco, back in 2023, you called the Sasol decision an existential risk to large industrial users of gas, and that it was likely to lead to the deindustrialization or the further deindustrialization of the South African economy. Many industries have already been forced, you said, to halt investment and growth plans due to the risk of a gas energy shortage. The cutoff became known as the gas cliff, off of which we would fall once the users had no supplies. But now, Jaco, you've had some cheerful news because the government's about to gazette a new energy plan, the 2025 version of the so-called Integrated Resources Plan, the IRP. And they're taking a big bet on gas, which up until now has never been used, I don't think, to make electricity in South Africa of any consequential amount. And I think I saw a statement or statements from you to the effect that you were very pleased to hear it.
I think, Peter, it's correct because well, yes and no. Let me rather rephrase it in that context. So yes, in the sense that it assures South Africa is a demand-driven or gas-demand-driven country. At the moment, it is true that consumption of gas, although very critical in our industrial processes, is not, we suffer scale. So power generation plays a critical role in the pivot towards a gas economy, a gas-reliant economy, away from coal, towards renewables and towards gas. As we move forward, of course, it creates scale. Now, from that perspective, we are pleased. We expected the outcome, more or less, based on the 2024 draft that we saw. And in our opinion, the gas exposure that we anticipate is quite critical to balance out with the increase in the renewable energies that we foresee over the next decade and a half. So it does create demand. It puts South Africa as a market for gas, a sizable market. In fact, we see a fivefold increase in the demand of gas from current levels towards the end of the next decade. That is on the demand side. What we suffer, though, is supply, all right, which is, of course, a whole different conversation.
So this is the point. But before we get to that, just describe to us, Jaco, what the industrial use of gas looks like in South Africa. So who are the big users? How do they get the gas? Where does it come from? And how does it get to them? Yeah, just a brief overview.
So all energy is not electricity and vice versa. All right. So gas plays a very important role in the energy mix of large industries. At the moment, we express demand, of course, in petajoules or millions of gigajoules. But a petajoule essentially is required to flow from Mozambique at the moment to service us for natural gas. We use roughly about just short of 200 petajoules or 200 million gigajoules a year of gas in South Africa. And some of that, a small portion, is actually synthetic gas, which Sasol is a byproduct of their process, manufactures at Secunda, gas which mainly goes to the Mpumalanga complex and KwaZulu-Natal. So gas has been flowing for the last 20 years or so quite successfully with Sasol at the helm. But the problem is we haven't moved beyond that, and we are now constrained and limited by the depleting gas resource, of course, which now drives the gas cliff. So we are exposed as industry. And the application of gas is really wide. I mean, you know, it forms basically the essence of steel manufacturing in South Africa, aluminium smelting, glass, ceramics, the bread we eat, the packaging, the construction industry. So there's a very broad and wide application on the back of the network that currently exists.
And you can find mainly to KwaZulu and Gauteng and Mpumalanga, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. The network is completely limited to those three provinces at the moment. The bulk of it, of course, gets consumed at the Secunda complex by Sasol. About 2/3 of all our gas gets consumed there. And the balance, a small amount, probably about 20 petajoules or so in KwaZulu-Natal, and the balance, of course, by industry in Gauteng. So it is quite limited. And what we now actually see is that demand for gas in other regions in the country is far outstripping supply now. You know, so there is a need for based infrastructure world.
So let me just make the point, though, that so the IRP, I don't think it's been gazetted yet, but the electricity minister was talking about it last weekend. So they're now making a plan, right, to generate electricity using gas. Never happened before. We use coal, a little bit of water, hydro, and things like that, and increasingly some wind and some solar. But you are sort of you're a not inconsequential, but nonetheless incidental beneficiary potentially of the decision to use gas for power. And as far as you say, you use about, did I hear you say 200 petajoules at the moment?
Industry use about 200 petajoules, correct.
Oh, I was always under the impression that it was around 50 to 60 petajoules.
Well, include Sasol, of course, and then you add...
Okay. If you exclude Sasol, that would my 50 to 60 be more or less right?
Correct.
Okay. So your users, is Sasol a member? Probably is, right? Okay. So your users, and just to help listeners and viewers, 50 petajoules, and correct me whenever I'm wrong here, 50 petajoules is roughly the equivalent, the volume equivalent of around 55 million 19 kg bottles of gas. Is that right?
Excellent. Correct. So correction there. I mean, so Sasol is not a member of the Industrial Gas User Association.
Right. Okay.
So you're sitting with these large industry players, and you're quite right. You know, 1 gigajoule of energy represents about 19 kilograms of LPG gas.
Yeah.
You know, the percent of energy.
And Jaco, who are the biggest industrial, excluding Sasol? Who are the big names so that just people can relate to the big companies we're talking about?
Exactly. So I mean, you're obviously sitting with the steel industry, which is heavy consumers of gas energy. I mean, these include ArcelorMittal, Skor. You're sitting in the glass and ceramics, Ardagh Group. You're sitting with ceramic industries, etc. Yeah. You're sitting with PFG, of course, building glass.
Yeah.
These are the intensive users, South 32, Mondi, Ilovo, and so on and so forth. You know,
it's used mainly for heating, right?
Industrial heating and chemical processes in certain instances.
Okay. Yeah, correct. Yeah. So the IRP, on the other hand, envisions up to 16,000 megawatts of new gas-fired electricity. That's an enormous amount of new gas they're going to need, which would presumably do. I don't know how much gas you need to produce 16,000 megawatts of electricity, but you must be talking 1,000 petajoules. I mean, just huge numbers.
Exactly. You know, to put it in perspective, Peter, is that, you know, South Africa currently, mainly for industrial purposes, uses this 200 petajoules of gas. If you look at the first tranche of the IRP, which calls for six gigawatts of gas, that isn't a doubling up of exactly what we need today. And that doubling up by 2030 will have to come from imported LNG, right? So the balance, if you then extrapolate from there, we would ultimately need just on power an additional 500 petajoules of gas, all right? So it is quite significant. Now, of course, what comes at play is what happens in the next decade. You know, if you limit your exposure to power generation to LNG right now, and you start looking at domestic and regional sources for gas for the balance of, you know, what is being planned, then the economic impact could be significant, positively, on the South African industrial complex, purely because domestic and regional gas is so much cheaper than imported LNG.
Yeah, and we'll come to our domestic gas, but the question I wanted to ask you is whether importing enough gas, and we leave the domestic supply aside for the moment, because we're going to have to import for a start. So you first of all would have to build gas to power stations. Then you'd have to build the terminals to receive the imported gas to fire the power stations. And my question and my cynicism a little bit, skepticism about the plan is that, first of all, we've got no control or experience of international gas prices. And we saw what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine and the Europeans tried to stop gas imports from Russia. The price went right through the roof. It sunk the German and British economies practically. So we would have to import all of that. And we've got really no experience of the international market. And I wonder whether it's unreasonable to suggest that, is creating a 1,000 petajoule solution to a 50 petajoule problem, i.e. the gas cliff, is that reasonable? Does it make sense? I know it makes sense to you because you're going to get all the gas you want.
What about
the rest of us?
You're correct.
We've got to pay for it.
Let's unpack that. So we need to bank at least, and we will have to, if you consider the gas cliff and this initial 6 gigawatt requirement, we need to build infrastructure to import about 200 petajoules of gas. All right. Additionally, so it means that half of that would go for power generation, which is currently being planned. And the other half, of course, the continuation of LNG, of industrial consumption. Sasol has already indicated that they cannot use LNG in their processes. So you can take that big chunk of demand and you can actually exclude it from that. So we need roughly about 150 to 200 petajoules worth of gas import infrastructure in LNG. And the ultimate demand towards the end of the next decade, we're looking at 1,000 petajoules. In other words, five times that much. Now, so what this means is that, yes, you are quite right. From pieces of infrastructure, we need LNG infrastructure in Richards Bay, and we need LNG infrastructure in Mossel Bay. Putting up this infrastructure, of course, there are international players that are well experienced in this. Are we going to be exposed to a new energy cost and a new basis for pricing in the South African economy? Yes. If you look at the indices around gas pricing, you typically link gas pricing to Henry Hub, Brent, it could be JKM if you're in the spot market. To address the concern of fluctuations, yes, I mean, we will be exposed to these indices, but historically, these indices, particularly Henry Hub, has actually been quite stable, right? Because there are different economic drivers, mainly in the United States, that keep that index more or less flat. Now, our long-term forecasting points to a relatively stable outcome. There are, however, black swans, which are geopolitical in nature, as you've rightly said, but no one can predict that. So from an industrial perspective and from a power generation perspective, at least this first tranche, we have to reset the economy on about a $10 to $12 per gigajoule basis on a long term for LNG consumption. For this, let's call it this first 150 to 200 petajoules. So the infrastructure cost included in that, and of course the power generation cost, if you want to build power stations on the Romco or in Richards Bay as being planned, then of course that becomes an electricity tariff of which all these other costs are included, right? So yes, LNG is expensive. If you look at power generation cost from LNG, in our determination, it brings you roughly to about R1.90 to R2 per kilowatt hour going forward. So, and that is, incidentally, that is more or less what industry is facing at a mega flex basis at this point in time. The exception is that Eskom power is going to be becoming more expensive by 15% per year, as we anticipate. All right. So Eskom power is going to become more expensive if we do nothing. If we bring gas on board, we will pay roughly what we pay now in terms of power generation, only on the LNG portion. And that will take us forward. The benefit of the gas plan, of course, and the IRP is that so much more is dependent on gas consumption and power generation in the future. Now, if we can get the domestic and regional gas trick right, that cost becomes quite less to generate power because the gas is cheaper.
At the moment, it's cheaper, but I mean, as you say, you simply cannot calculate the black swan event, and anything could happen. Russia is the biggest supplier of natural gas in the world.
Yeah, you're quite right. No one can anticipate that. But on that statement, the inverse is also true. The gas could drop in price, you know, equally. So we are looking at a long term basis, and of course, the, you know, we have a view on that. But you're right. I mean, we will be exposed. This is not going to be a domestic procurement of fuel or coal, you know, that we have at this point in time.
And it's probably no surprise that part of the government's proposed trade deal with the Trump administration in Washington includes quite a big order for American natural gas for, I think, the next 20 years, right? 70 petajoules, well, I think. Probably a direct memo from you, Jacko.
But details around that transaction is very sketchy. I mean, we're aware of government looking at something in that regard, but government-to-government deals don't exist. Right, and they won't exist in the South African context.
So, Jacko, I guess what could go wrong? Yeah, you've had the announcement. You haven't seen the Gazette. There'll be delays. Inevitably, going to be delays because this is the South African state that we are talking about. Yeah, and I remember you telling me back when we last spoke in February 2024, because of the gas clip, which is now just 8 months away, according to Sasol's first announcement. I don't know if it's been amended. That in February 2024, you said that in order to be ready for the gas cliff, you needed work on an import terminal to start by June last year. Clearly, that hasn't happened. So how close are you to disaster here?
So we are pushing the envelope. Let me tell you that Sasol has, you may be aware, that Sasol has actually extended the gas cliff by 2 years. They said post the previous...
I hadn't fully appreciated that. Okay.
Sure. No problem. So Sasol has recently said that they can supply natural gas until June 2026. So the original June 2024 was moved to June 2026. And on top of that, Sasol has said, I will supply with synthetic gas, in other words, gas from coal, for another 2 year period beyond 26. So the real gas cliff kicks in on June 30. In other words, we're going to have, if you start there and you work backwards to June 28, we will be using synthetic gas during that period. And from June 28 until today, of course, working backwards, we will use natural gas as being supplied.
Okay. When it originally announced its gas cliff, it wasn't telling the truth. I mean, suddenly it's found enough gas for another 6 years almost, right? Is that
not enough natural gas? Not enough natural gas. I mean, you know, which
synthetic or natural? Yeah,
exactly. So, Sasol. I mean, it is absolutely critically important that Sasol actually create this space, this 2 year or 4 month space for industry, but. The problem is also, you know, talking about Sasol, since Sasol's announcement of the gas cliff and the subsequent announcements to that, Sasol actually haven't approached the market with an alternative solution. All right. So industry has moved to create its own entity called Gas Hub and the aggregation function that goes with that, in order to facilitate transactions in LNG and future gas. So there are movements, but why I'm saying that we are pushing the envelope is that this is the problem. Industry demand in itself is not sufficient to bank infrastructure. We need alignment and sequencing with the IRP, all right? And that is absolutely critical now to avoid the gas cliff. And right now, if you look at the reset of the program, we, in our opinion, the gas cliff actually... we need to contract for LNG together with the government, together with the IPP process on gas to power, the market inquiry that is out, together with the newly published IRP in order to stack demand sufficiently and contract as a country. If we don't allow Eskom, private power generation under the I4P and industrial demand, we will not be able to do this. And that is quite a mammoth task. And the government is not, although we're talking to government about this, they're not moving on this. So we demand stack, as we call it, we need the transaction wrap. You know, we need government to provide certain fiscal frameworks and guarantees for the infrastructure that we're speaking about.
So the infrastructure you're talking about, let alone Eskom or electricity, you need a terminal, right? You need somewhere for the gas to land. And you need, from the place where it lands, you need a pipeline to take it to your users. And none of that's even begun to happen yet, right? You don't have a place for a terminal. There's talk of southern Mozambique. There's talk of Richards Bay. There was talk at one stage, if I'm not mistaken, of Kucha down in PE. And you also now mentioned Mossel Bay. So Mossel Bay is miles away from any industrial user. How would you get it from Mossel? Would you have to then build a... I mean, I know, look, the tenders would be eye-watering, but to get a pipeline from Mossel Bay to Gauteng is going to cost a pretty penny.
No, of course. So, Peter, I mean, the reality is that we need LNG terminals in southern Mozambique, Matola, or in Haso, and Richards Bay, sorry. So we need two terminals, one in Mozambique and one in Richards Bay. That, in our opinion, simply has to happen. Kucha, in our view, is academical. Kucha has got no bearing on solving the gas cliff and the future of gas in South Africa. And similarly, Mossel Bay is not destined for LNG. Mossel Bay can only happen on the back of the offshore domestic gas like Rolpada. But it needs power as an anchor, right? And that is all key. And again, it's a matter of economics. You know, if we can get that right, that power will be very affordable, in our opinion. So Mossel Bay is not pegged for a LNG infrastructure. Kucha, in our opinion, is not necessary, simply by virtue of the demand that we anticipate in that part of the world. Richards Bay and Mozambique is critical.
You need two terminals. Would one not be enough for you guys? I mean, you can put 50 petajoules through one terminal, surely.
You know, the thing is that Richards Bay, if we could, Richards Bay would have been a preferred site for a terminal. But the problem is we cannot deliver that gas in its totality in the markets in Gauteng and in Mpumalanga. We need brand new pipelines. So in order to use the infrastructure that you have, which is the Romco and the Lilly pipelines, you know, and there is demand for both, you know, we're saying it's not
so the Lilly the Lilly pipeline delivers from Romco down to Durban, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
It delivers from Secunda, exactly, from Secunda, where the Romco comes in. It delivers down from Secunda to KZN. What Transnet now anticipates is the injection of LNG in Richards Bay and the distribution of gas up to the northern point, but not into Secunda, and then down to Durban. And then we anticipate then gas to flow from Mozambique in the form of LNG in future.
Just to stick with the what could go wrong.
Yes, of course, we haven't covered that.
Yeah,
correct.
You know, you're asking of a fabulously inefficient government to get going. Okay, so they're late with this plan, the IRP. It hasn't been gazetted yet, but let's assume in the next, you know, weeks or so. And then they have to issue a request for proposals, a request of interest proposals. There have to be tenders. Can you imagine? And then, you know, then perhaps work will start, and who knows whether the work will proceed as planned. I mean, you could be pushing 2026, 2027 without a hole being dug in the ground quite easily. And my question is, what will you do about it then?
So that's the risk. We acknowledge these plans, but at the end of the day, they remain plans, right? And like we said at the beginning, this simply deals with the demand side of energy and gas and the power generation going forward. It doesn't deal with the supply side of gas. Now, on the supply side of gas, you know, if you stack up all these things, I mean, the Minister Ramaphosa is talking about 2.2 trillion rands worth of investment in power by the end of the next decade. On top of that, we're talking about 500 billion rands roughly in transmission line upgrades. Gas infrastructure, in our opinion, on LNG, not significant. You're talking here about 1.2 to 1.5, maybe 2 billion in its entirety, just to develop rand. The infrastructure in Richards Bay and Matola, it is not significant in the bigger scheme of things, the cost of that particular infrastructure. But if you want to leverage domestic and regional gas, and we see the West Coast as that play, you probably need an upgrade in pipelines and networks along the lines of another 4.5 billion or 80 billion rand, $4.5 billion or 80 billion rand, roughly.
Because that's a pipeline from Port Nolloth to Johannesburg, basically, right, or wherever.
Exactly. We're about to embark on a project now, which will look at the feasibility of that. All right, in the absence of anything else, the reason for that is purely economically driven, Peter. And you know, it comes back to our early question. We will transition to LNG, but as a country, it is critically important that we limit our exposure to LNG, simply because LNG is inaffordable in the long run in power generation and, of course, industrial applications. You know, and in fact, it could be you could say that if you take all South Africa's gas demand and you put it on LNG, we're talking about an economic slow puncture. All right.
So when you say it's not sustainable in the long run, gas, LNG, why even start? I mean, you're saying basically that this is just a transition fuel.
So
energy in South Africa.
So gas is not a transition fuel. We see that actually as a destination fuel. Right. But we can explore that concept. But
okay.
what we are saying is that by 2030, we've missed the boat on planning, on the leveraging domestic and regional gas. We've missed the boat on gas master planning. We've got no formal official position on gas master planning today as a country. We don't. So the reality is, and this is purely risk. Eskom, by the end of this decade, has to commission between 6 and 8 gigawatts of coal-fired power stations. You know, that capacity has to be replaced with something. Similarly with industry, we're faced with a gas cliff. It has to be replaced with something. Now, if that's something in the short term, because we've missed all these boats and buses, you know, over the last 15 years or so, we actually have got to pay the LNG price. It's affordable if we can limit our exposure to LNG.
Okay, I get that, but. You know, you could wait for the Department of Electricity, or is it the Department of Minerals and Petroleum Resources? Because that, I don't think, is clear either. As you well know, Eskom is unable to buy its own diesel for its auxiliary generators directly because Minister Guedimantashe at Mineral Resources says, no, you have to buy directly from the state. We will procure. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, going out into the market with the state to buy and secure long-term contracts for LNG now, how do you think the state is going to behave? Because Guedimantashe is going to be in that delegation, in those talks, and he's going to want to say, hang on a second, PetroSA was born to do this. You know, we'll buy the gas and you can buy it from us.
We've had engagements with the Central Energy Fund on this very notion of gas aggregation. The problem is there's no market position. Industry can't wait for the state. Hence, industry has moved forward to create its own aggregation concept and company that will in future buy and sell gas to itself. Now, the issue here is not actually about the molecule, Peter. It is not about where we buy LNG. Now, LNG, anyone can buy all over the world. It is available in abundance. It is the new crude oil. All right. So, from that perspective, we don't have concerns. What we do have concerns about is shared infrastructure. And that is where the focus should be. And that is where industry, the private sector and the state simply, and the likes of Eskom, the IPP, the IPP office, future private power generators, need to look and sequence around and build sufficient demand, economically sufficient demand around each piece of infrastructure. That is critical. We're not worried about molecules. That's not our concern. And the state has to do what the state needs to do, you know, with regards to future gas procurement. We've got no, the state's got no position, whether it is in supply, exploration, gas master planning on gas today. Industry is actually crafting its own gas master.
But you still need the state to implement it, because you otherwise you can't get a ship,
you know,
to land here, right? Yeah.
You know, this is where we do need the state is in the sequencing of demand, absolutely, because we need to build that demand, but we also need the state to support these transactions fiscally. It's like a toll road concession where you've got a private developer and the state steps in just to provide guarantees in terms of volume throughput, you know, or insurance policy that will de-risk the project for the developers and those investors.
Yeah. So you know, your members are big, rich companies, right? They've got shareholders, they've got creditors, they've got huge workforces. So what have you been facing, these really tough deadlines? Okay, Sasol has extended them somewhat. Nonetheless, a cliff is a cliff, and there is a point where Sasol is saying you're going to fall off. Maybe they're lying to you. Maybe it's a game. You know, they are trying to secure for their own supply, whatever it might be. But anyway, you have to proceed on the basis that they mean what they say. What else have you done to look for an alternative to the fuel that you use for heating now? Have you looked at all for other forms of heating to, I don't, you know, there are lots of them, but the one that occurs to me in South Africa, because the government goes on and on and on about how it's going to become the global center for this fuel, is hydrogen, which burns really well. And so why aren't you looking for our own hydrogen? It's already here. We can price it. We don't have to go, you know, it's there. It belongs to us. And it's apparently available. And you make it from water. You know, you just got to separate the O and the what is it, H2O? Yeah. Okay. You got to separate the hydrogen and the oxygen, and you got the hydrogen. Fabulous. What's wrong with that?
It sounds like a fairy tale, Peter, if it was true. All right. It certainly, I mean, if you look at energy transition in the industrial complex today, it's gas and renewables. That is what we anticipate the future to be. And most of our members are actually planning a transition along those lines. More renewables, more gas. In other words, less coal. So starting to look at alternatives to mitigate the gas cliff, everyone's got a plan, well, to the extent that one can. Remember, technically, many of these industries are entrenched in the use of gas. But assume there are places where gas could be substituted. Options are coal. And these options are being reviewed at the moment. Options are heavy industrial. Well, the problem is it's not pretty. All right. Environmentally, it is a scary, scary thought, you know, to go back to those energy types. However, if you look at the future, to your point, you know, what does hydrogen mean? You know, it's a fairy fuel.
Okay. I'm going to use that. So, but you know, when you're going back to gas, and you said that the infrastructure will cost, you said between 2 and 8 billion rand. Was that right?
That's not, dollars.
Okay. So that's different. I did
so
ask you. Yeah.
LNG would not cost more than $1.5 to $2 billion to put that in.
Okay.
And to have a fully fledged network leveraging the potential of West Coast gas, we anticipate about $4 billion.
Okay. But for the basic.
You know, which compared to the upgrades that we're doing on transmission networks and those kind of things, it's actually not that intense.
Okay. But surely your members could afford $2 billion to build a gas import terminal and a pipeline to wherever you wanted without waiting for the state to go and rescue you and to coddle you up you know, because the state is going to take an inordinate amount of time. There are going to be 100 court cases stopping this and that and objecting to. It's already happened, has it not, at Richards Bay, where Eskom was prevented from beginning work on a gas to power plant for environmental concerns. So there's going to be more of that, surely.
Yeah, you know, Peter. I mean, if you look across the South African economy, and I refer to it as the network economics, whether it's ports, rail, water is the next big one, gas, power, transmission. I mean, the infrastructure demand and the costs around these things are too onerous for the state. The state simply don't have the ability to fund these things from their checkbook. All right. So one needs to find alternative fiscal models in order to involve. The state has a role to play in it. All right. So if you can anticipate a world where these big infrastructure investments, relatively big in terms of gas and so on, are required, it is quite feasible that the private sector could step in to actually fund this and actually bank these projects through long-term demand. But what you need is an insurance policy to ensure that the demand will remain over the financial period of an investment, project investment. So typically, you know, again, I'm using the toll road analogy. The private sector builds and put up a toll road with their own money. They bring in the revenue from the usage of the infrastructure. But in the fine print of these contracts and agreements, of course, is the state guarantees around volume throughput. So the volume throughput, the state will simply say, if traffic on my toll road drops, I'm willing to step in, make good. That's all we need from the state going forward. Because clearly the state, whether it's Eskom, the SOEs, simply don't have the means. So all these things, and the problem we have in South Africa today is particularly in gas infrastructure. There's no formal fiscal framework. We see it successfully in the power sector, where the private sector through the IPP office, you know, all the fiscal frameworks exist, but not in the gas infrastructure space. And that is a big risk, a big part of the execution risk that we see within the IRP.
Yeah. So you're not going to do what the coal industry did and build them. You know, they went and built an export terminal for themselves at Richards Bay. You're not going to do that and build yourselves an import terminal without the state backing you up or providing some sort of guarantee, because you're not certain that you're going to be using that kind of gas for however long you need to fulfill the terms of a long-term contract. So remember, why can't you be sure? I mean, you're very confident about the need for gas and the usefulness of gas. Right. You're not backing yourselves, Jacob. I mean, surely the way to back yourself is to build your own terminal and get you and use your own gas and forget about the government.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Peter, you know, apart from the cost of infrastructure that is required here, right, you got the carrying a project of this nature fiscally, it's probably almost double the cost. So you've got to have performance agreements over the duration of 20 years, etc. And very similar to power procurement, where the state simply comes in and say, I guarantee, you know, I will have this.
Yeah.
Private sector is happy to back it and take some risk, but it simply cannot afford to take all risk. All right. That is the issue. It's the affordability of the total risk package, which is not sustainable, particularly in the current economic environment.
Yeah. So Jaco, what happens now? What are you waiting for? There'll be court challenges to almost every aspect of this IRP. You can almost guarantee it, right? And you've seen what they did at Richards Bay. What's going to happen? What happens?
Peter, what simply has to happen in order to mitigate the gas cliff? That is priority number one. We've got to have continuity in the South African economy, right, in order to achieve everything else, whether it's the IRP, the future of gas from the West Coast, and all these fantastic things. So we have to put in measures to avoid the gas cliff. What we're saying to the state is we have now run out of time. We simply have to talk about demand stacking, and that simply means the sequencing and addition of gas demand through Eskom, through industry, and through private power generation. Those are the three protagonists that we see in this story as a demand stack solution. So the sequencing, so that South Africa, SA Inc., can put forward an agreement for LNG supply and infrastructure development. That's priority number one. Priority number two is simply what we refer to as the transaction wrap. How do you structure a transaction of this nature between Eskom, industry, private power generation, in terms of the guarantee requirements? What is the risk that industry can take and can afford to take? What is the role of the state in order to underwrite this infrastructure? Remember, this we're talking here about infrastructure that is really equivalent to a port, you know, or a common use highway, or you know. So network economics is important, And if we don't get that right, we will sit with a market failure. And the primary role in of a government in a developing economy is to smooth out market failures. And we have to find the fiscal framework. So it is really amongst the demand stack and the transaction wrap, in other words. And we literally have to get going right now. We see that the government is about to issue or get moving on a gas master plan very shortly, or at least publish something. We're not sure and confident that gas cliff is sufficiently addressed in that. We will participate in a gas advisory forum with the minister on many of these gas-related issues, and we hope that very shortly that mainly these issues around the gas demand stack and the wrap, the transaction wrap, will come to the fore. We have to start working these problems in order to land something commercially by the end of next year. Otherwise, we are facing a gas cliff.
So what has to happen by the end of next year?
Contracts need to be concluded, because it takes roughly about 3 to 4 years, for infrastructure to be developed and to put in place. So you've got a contract for something for delivery in the middle of 2030.
Right. Jackie, you know, the great worry of some people, I suppose, is that what you create by encouraging the government, because you're encouraging them because it's in your own interest to encourage them, because you need the gas that they want for electricity. You want to siphon some of all of that off for industrial purposes. All well and good. You're important companies, and it's important. It's an important big part of the economy. But the risk surely is in encouraging gas as a permanent source of energy in South Africa. First of all, there's a huge risk, as you must appreciate, of corruption in the amount of tenders that will then go out for pipelines and fittings and ports and this and expropriation of, you know, how long does it take to expropriate a piece of land to put a pipeline across? You know, it's extraordinary. And if it's a private pipeline, even longer than it's going to take the government to do it, I presume. All of these things are in the South Africa which we know now, which is very complex, very deeply, deeply corrupted, run one single great risk is that these assets that you now build, the import terminal, that they eventually become stranded, because they because technology passes them by. There are other forms of heat. Hydrogen will turn out to be the hottest thing that you can, you know, you can put in a bottle and you can burn forever. Who knows what is going to happen? But you know, it's a very old technology. Gas. The Europeans have been using it for over a century. And so this is nothing new. This is new to South Africa. And I just wonder whether the risk, and I understand your position as gas users, but I wonder whether you are appreciative enough of the risk that these assets, we could build them, we could build the pipelines, that they'll eventually be stranded, because they are, whether, as you know, they're not as polluting as coal, but they're nonetheless, it's a fossil fuel. And if South Africa starts signing any more documents about how it's going to, you know, get to carbon neutral by 2050, you don't know whether gas is going to be considered one of those fuels by 2050, no matter how much the Europeans may now depend on it. Everybody, you say, you know, people are building nuclear power stations. And by 2050, there'll be small modular nuclear power stations you can have in your backyard.
You know, Peter, I mean, so you raise a couple of interesting things. Let me start on the energy mix. By 2040, if you purely look at electricity, not industrial energy or logistics energy or anything in that field, I mean, gas would represent roughly about 15% of the total input into the energy, where nuclear and renewable actually is looking at 65%, right? By 2040, the additions, all right, to that. So what you see is a significant switch in terms of the energy transition for South Africa. Having said that, there is no economy in the world that runs 100% on renewable energy today, right? The problem is that you've got to develop infrastructure, and this infrastructure comes with a price tag, and the price tag is 20 years minimum. All right. So you are locking in infrastructure for 20 years, but what's the alternative? The alternative today simply doesn't exist, right? So we cannot go on 100% renewables. It's not possible. And remember, energy, particularly in the energy space, I've heard the metaphor earlier today that you know, energy is like the Springbok team, the rugby team. You cannot play with 15 Eben Etzebets, all right? You have to diversify between players and types of energy to provide an impactful outcome. So gas is there, in our view, is a practical and affordable solution and contributing towards just energy transition. That deals with the mix. Your point around the role of the state is critically important, right? The state anticipates, we anticipate a much diminished role of the state in any of these infrastructure projects going forward, simply because the cupboards are empty. There's no more fiscal headroom in order to invest and take money by the state and invest in these projects. Also, the execution by the state of these projects and the management of these assets into the long term. So you see this playing out in Transnet at the moment. You know, LNG infrastructure in Richards Bay is a joint venture with an internationally renowned company called Vopak, all right, to build and operate these terminals. And we see that starting to play out across the infrastructure space in South Africa, where the private sector and the state simply would have to take hands. So what does it mean to address your concerns of corruption? I think corruption, I'm not saying that the state is going to, no corruption will take place, or even for that matter, that the private sector is not corrupt, all right? But I think we will be much less exposed to these endemic corruption that we've seen over the last 10, 15 years, you know, and purely because we see a shift in the balance of infrastructure participation between the state and the private sector. There simply has to be those checks and balances in place going forward, and I'm confident that they will be there.
Jaco Hoeman, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed that, and this is such an important moment for our economy, and the pressures I know are absolutely immense. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with another edition of Podcasts from the Edge next week. Until then, keep safe. Bye-bye.